So just as a quick introduction, I am actually trained in health policy, but my entire professional life been spent in departmental surgery. First at Johns Hopkins, I was there for 10 years with a primary appointment in surgery and a joint appointment in health policy. I'm now the director of outcomes research in the Department of Surgery here at UC San Diego. So let me start by pulling this up. This is, if you were to Google now for the word medical research, this is what you're going to get under Google Images. And what you see is basically a lot of sort of the genetics, basic science stuff. This personally is troubling to me because outcome is really, for me, when I talk about outcome, is really a combination of three things. There's the patient, there's the treatment that you get, and there's the provider. And the problem is, if you go back to these images, none of these research are looking at how the provider affects outcomes. This is a big problem. In fact, this is why Institute of Medicine have looked at this issue and come up with reports such as Two Errors in Medicine Crossing the Quality Chasm. Medical errors kill so many people that if it was actually a top 10 causes of death, it actually would rank in the top 10 causes of death. It would actually rank number 6 in causes of death. Don't want to be dramatic, but this is almost a silent killer in our country today. It kills more people than car crashes. So why is this a problem? This is a problem because, again, outcome. Go back to my equation. The outcome is patient plus provider plus the therapeutics. The problem is when you have a bad outcome, it's very difficult to say that it's because of the provider quality, error, competence issues. It's very easy for someone to say, well, my patients are either bigger, sicker, or older, or poor, or less insured, whatever. And so it's very difficult to tease out whether it's a patient problem or it's a provider problem. So this is always the problem, and this is why people have looked into this issue of how to do outcomes research in clinical science. And the gist basically is to differentiate between whether it's a patient problem or a provider problem. I'm going to give you three examples. First one is the one we did back when I was in Maryland. We looked at this issue of under-triaged trauma patients. Earlier there was an example of looking at trauma and EMS. This is a study where we looked to see whether patients who are injured exactly the same way, with the same sorts of injury severity, are they less likely to go to a designated trauma center because they're older. And in fact, we found that if when you are older, and we'll define that differently, when you get to age 65, your chance of not going to a trauma center is actually half, 48%. But if you're younger, it's only 17%. If you look at it by different years we looked at, these tables are set up with left minus right. So if you have see a positive number in the yellow column, it basically means the rate was higher in the elderly patients. And so it's higher in every year, in both gender, in every physiology criteria, in every injury criteria, including someone who is in shock, who had multi-system trauma, who was shot with a single system, severe single system injury, penetrating injury, CNS injury. Mechanism criteria, you see the same way people who get ejected from vehicle for some reason, elderly patients are less likely to go to the trauma center. Again, this is something we actually looked into quite a bit in the state of Maryland. This was actually awarded with an award from the governor of Maryland back in the mid-2000s. Let me give you a second example. This is an example that I use as sort of a quick introduction to quality issues. This is from one of my own papers looking at outcomes and quality in pancreatic surgeries, complex surgery. And what you see on the x-axis is number of cases that a hospital does a year. A dot is one hospital per year. This is from one of our national data sets. On the y-axis, you have the mortality rate of that hospital that year. And what you see is as the volume goes down, mortality drops. That was the point of the paper. The problem is you can see a few dots on the left side. They're basically up at 100%. Range. A lot of those 100% mortality are hospitals that do very few of these complex cases, one, two, or three. When you do one, two, or three cases, bad luck. It's very easy to hit 100%. The problem is you can actually see one dot that's kind of separate from everybody else. That dot actually has a case number of 12. So that means that hospital tried 12 cases of this complex pancreatic surgery and all 12 patients died. And they somehow didn't stop this guy after the sixth or the seventh or the eighth death. So this is a problem we have. This is a quality problem, and this is why we don't spend enough time looking at the provider side of the equation. We focus a lot on the patient side of the equation. This is why I'm bothered by all those Google images looking at medical research and just showing all these basic science research pictures. This all can also lead to new knowledge. I think all of you know nowadays if you have appendicitis, you go to the ER, they'll do an appendectomy, they'll take out your appendix. Turns out this wasn't in the case. This wasn't the case before. In fact, back in the days of the Cold War, when a submarine goes down, they don't come up for anything. They don't want the Soviets to know where they've been, where they are, so they don't medevac you. They will either try to do appendectomy on you in the sub, which is very difficult to do, and they describe these cases where they try to do this in 4 hours. Usually it would take an intern in our service 10 minutes to do this, take them to 4 hours while they've been death charged by Soviets, so it doesn't work. So they figure that what they'll try to do is they'll try antibiotic management. treatment. And it turned out a lot of them are actually fine. They actually published these case series showing that you can manage them with antibiotics, and most of them actually do fine. It turned out, when I did this talk recently, someone actually told me that the Soviet Navy actually found the same thing. It was actually published in the Soviet literature, which I can't read, so I didn't actually find it. So we wanted to actually look at this in the California data set where we have access to from the state of California, where we can follow patients for as long as 15 years throughout the entire state of California. We looked for patients who showed up with a non-ruptured appendicitis, not the ones that are already ruptured, the ones that come in non-ruptured, and see what happened to them if for some reason they didn't get a surgery. For whatever reason, because the surgeon wasn't available or they just got sick of waiting, they just walked out on their home. We were able to find, in the course of 15 years throughout the entire state, about 3,000 patients. Most of them went on to do fine. None of them actually, 90% of them never came back. Of the 10% that came back, only 30% out of 10%, or 3% of the total, actually ruptured. So the concept that if you don't operate on a non-ruptured appendicitis, it would actually rupture eventually is not supported by the data. So why is this difficult? The problem is inputs into the healthcare system is highly variable. Patients are a lot more variable than other things you look at. So a simple comparison of outcome would not be valid. If you look at a mortality rate of UCSD, it would be higher than the mortality rate of Scripps. And that's not because we're a worse hospital, it's because we see sicker patients. And so this requires what we call risk adjustments. And this is complex. There's a body of knowledge behind it, and it requires a lot of secondary processing that are not already in the data sets. So it's not something where you can just have a computer program and set it in a database and just start doing it. There's a science behind this. But I think this is something that may be valuable to other fields that have similarly wide variations. Some example that come to mind, education, law enforcement, where people are very different. You may also need to think about risk adjustments. What we offer is we have a training sessions. We meet on a weekly basis. We work with residents, medical students, postdoc, even new faculty. We have access to a collection of cloud-based data sets. There are multiple data sets. We have over 100 million records from different sources of databases. Some have more details, some have less details, and some are more specialty specific, some are multi-specialty specific. And I'm coming to a stop here. What we may need help with, I think we need more data. Most of the data sources nowadays, it turns out, only provide a little bit of explanatory power, about 20-30%. And it's amazing that we're making health policy on some of these research that really only explain less than 20% of the data. I think additional data sources would be helpful. And these are probably going to come from non-clinical sources, to be honest. I think this is going to come from people's contextual environments, homework, social context, and or information about the provider. I see a lot of mHealth stuff today. None of that is being applied to providers. And a lot of that has been hooked on the patients. So I think this is a challenge, to try to get more data from the providers themselves. And in terms of analysis, I think it'd be helpful to have analytic techniques for identifying rare mutations, people talk genetics, that could be helpful in terms of identifying outlier populations, outlying patients, and outlying practices. Thank you.
All right, what we'd like to do here is take a question for David while we invite the other speakers in this session to please take their seats up at the panel, and then we'll open it up for questions.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Will you make any of this data available to patients?
Yeah, so the concept is accountability and transparency. The government has done a little bit of that. Medicare has done a little bit of that. It's very difficult to understand. But I think the bigger problem, though, most people don't think about quality as an issue. Most people find doctors based on who you know, based on what your insurance tells you, based on parking. That's actually a very common reason people tell us how they found us, and not based on this. So these websites have been available for many, many years, and they're underutilized. In fact, government actually put out a $10 million grant last year to try to figure out how to get people to use this more. I think the bigger question is people don't think about quality. People still think about patient determinants, how your genes affect outcomes, and not how providers affect outcomes. And intuitively, we all know provider affects outcomes.
Okay.